Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day. Welcome to Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. I'm John Marino, and we are produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities through April of 2021. Lipolis Electric, don't be left in the dark. Get Lipolis. Also, Hightower Westchester, managing your wealth to a fiduciary standard. And White Plains Hospital, our thanks to our heroes, White Plains, for all they've done throughout this COVID-19 pandemic. We are joined, welcome back today, we say to Jovan C. Richards. Jovan, middle initial C. Richards is the executive director of the Westchester County Democratic Committee and a New Rochelle Democratic Committee district leader, also president, New York State Young Democrats, Northeast Regional Director for the Young Democrats of America, Westchester Young Democratic Committee board member, and also a media and government relations manager for the New York State Society of CPAs. Jovan, welcome back. Always great to talk to you. I do have to point out, during my days at WVOX in New Rochelle, you are our assistant news director, so I had to answer to you back then.
I think it was the other way around, my friend. I think I was answering to you.
We answered to each other at that time, right?
Of course.
That's how I looked at it. We worked together, right?
Of course we did.
Fun days they were. Jovan, this weekend, it is the weekend we remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. here on the Cup of Joe political show. All he did, all he meant to everybody in this country. I'll start off by saying, when I think of the five greatest Americans of all time, Dr. King immediately comes to me in any conversation, in any way you want to move around the five greatest Americans. He's always there. What does his legacy mean to you?
I mean, his legacy was really the groundbreaking, glass ceiling shattering movement. You know, peaceful protests, which it at the heart of America is its principle, exercising, you know, protests and peaceful arguments between good and wrong. Without Martin Luther King, without his legacy, we don't have a Barack Obama. We don't have a Congressional Black Caucus. We don't have years of progressive values and action without Martin Luther King's legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here in Westchester. We're right now represented 2 out of 3 by young men of color or younger men of color. Mondaire Jones and Jamal Bowman would not be a thing without the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. So I say all that is to say his legacy is strong, his legacy is powerful, and his legacy is still relevant to this day. Because without him, we don't have the amazing opportunities that we have seen and we have had as a culture and as a community these last few years.
Do we, as a culture, and I'm talking people of all groups, of all stripes, of all racial groups and backgrounds, are the young people today educated enough in what MLK was and about and what he did, his legacy? Or is this something that seems to be, to some, maybe moving into something of the past?
So I think some people have a better education than others, but I think there's a great understanding of who he was as an advocate and as someone who was a change maker. And I think, you know, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, every politician at some point in their career loves to quote, or in some cases misquote, the great Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. All of us understand where he comes from. And, you know, sometimes I say his quotes are like the Bible or the Constitution because some people use them when they're just not justifiably right to do so. You know, everyone has their own depiction of certain things.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember growing up in the projects in East Harlem Every Saturday morning at 7 a.m., my good friend Vernon Flemings, who lived underneath me, would play and did this for about 2 years after MLK was assassinated. He would play Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, 7 o'clock every Saturday morning for about 2 years. And knowing all about Dr. King as a kid growing up, I remember the day he was assassinated. It was in April of 68. It was Easter weekend, if I remember correctly, too, at that time. And that legacy still lives strongly within me all of these decades later. I'm going to ask you, what took so long to make MLK Day a national holiday?
I think the same... It's the same reason why it took, ending Jim Crow so long. It is racism. America was not always the most progressive, and it was not always so willing to change its history. You know, slavery is America's greatest, its greatest stain. It's the greatest thing that America has, you know, and some people were okay with that stain. It's honestly just blatant racism.
Mm-hmm. Are we advanced enough as a society now? Have we integrated enough of MLK's doctrine, what he believed in, what he stood for? Have we gotten to a decent enough point at the moment? And that's a tough question right now.
It is, because, you know, you look back in time and you look at, you know, people like Barack Obama, who served as president for 8 years. So you look at, you know, the first black man who was president, and you say, absolutely. But then you look at the last 4 years and you look at the deaths of young black people and just black people in general at the hands of law enforcement. And you think, well, maybe we're not as progressive. Maybe we're not as cultured and prepared for the next phase of society that we thought we were. And I think that's a very important caveat to understand and realize. We've come a long way. We've made great strides. But our work is not done, and there are still people that wish to push us back into the dark ages of our past. Mm-hmm. And while there are still people that are willing to do that, and not just willing, but actually putting their money where their mouth is, and actually preparing, you know, we're on the eve of Joe Biden's inauguration, and you know, if you look just a couple of days ago on January 6th, there was a siege of white supremacists. You know, that's not Dr. King's legacy. Mm-hmm. They sieged the White House. They sieged the Capitol building because they didn't want their president, who advocates and promotes racial divides, to be booted out. Because with Donald Trump in the White House, it gives them every influence to take our country backwards, because he advocates for it and he promotes it and he tells his supporters that are white supremacists that he loves them and that they're special. That's not Dr. King's legacy. Dr. King was a man of peace. I mean, I'm sure if it came down to it, he would have to protect his own, but this man was a man of peace. You know, they burned down his house. They burned down his church. He didn't riot or grab pitchforks. He peacefully protests. He went to the courts. You know, we have to look at how we become civil with each other, because I think that is the most underrated part of MLK's legacy, is his civility.
Mm-hmm.
And we are losing that as a nation. And I hope that the next president will help ease those racial tensions, so we don't have to keep seeing Breonna Taylor's, and others die unnecessarily at the hands of those who are sworn to protect and serve.
Mm-hmm.
So MLK's legacy does have a lot more work to be done, but that does not go without saying we've come a long way. But this long way is not, you know, the ending point. This is, I don't even know if it's the middle, John. I think we're still making great strides to the middle, but we are getting closer. We're definitely getting closer. I mean, listen, we're about to swear in the first woman, but more, I think more importantly, a woman of color. Obviously, she's of Black and Indian descent, or Native descent. So I think it's important to really promote where his legacy is doing well, you know, with, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus being the biggest it's ever been, with Black leaders literally doing amazing things. You know, Sean Patterson Howard right here in Mount Vernon, of course, Mayor Rainey over there in Peekskill. Yeah. You have Ken Jenkins, who is basically helping to run the county as the deputy county executive. Right. You have Ben Boykin as the Board of Legislators chairman. You have Alfreda Williams, who is the vice chair of the Board of Legislators. You have the biggest delegation of color legislators at the Westchester BLL ever. You have the biggest delegation of Black legislators in Congress. You have the biggest, you now have more Black executives coming into power. And when I say executive, I do mean political. At first, it was just President Obama, but we're about to swear in Kamala Harris. So you're seeing the culture or Black culture being elevated. But that doesn't mean we don't, that doesn't mean that the killings have stopped. It doesn't mean the angry protests for white supremacy has stopped, because they're very much still active, and not just active, but motivated. And that's a scary combination. But I honestly believe that we are moving. Every time we do move two steps forward, we do take a step back. But we can't just think about the step back. We move two steps forward to take a step back. We're still moving forward. Unfortunately, it's slower than a lot of us would like it to be, but we're getting there.
Jovan C. Richards is the executive director of the Westchester County Democratic Committee and New Rochelle Democratic Committee district leader as well, along with a variety of other positions within the Democratic Party, both locally and regionally. Jovan, what was the appeal of Dr. King? How much of a difference did his personal style make?
I mean, I think he really did teach us the peaceful protest. You know, during his time, you had two great Black leaders who had two different visions. You know, the two more popular, because you did have a lot more than just two, but the two more popular were MLK, and then of course you had Malcolm X, who was a bit more of the, well, if they're going to hurt us, we're going to hurt them, you know, an eye for an eye type of ordeal, versus, you know, MLK's, we're going to protest, we're going to walk, we're going to march.
Malcolm X later in life moved over MLK's way.
Yeah.
His approach.
You know, I think you see that now. And I think we're really tapping into what MLK taught us. And I think this summer was proof of it, this past summer. During a whole pandemic, which frightened the world, Black men and women were still being killed by law enforcement. And you saw peaceful protests throughout this entire country. Now, a lot of people will say there weren't anything peaceful about it. But that's an abundant lie. That is an abundancy of lies. And I'm here to call them out. Those protests were peaceful. Were there people mixed into the crowd, and were there people attempting to do harm to others in the name of Black Lives Matter because they were surrounded by people peacefully protesting? Absolutely. There are always going to be, there's always going to be a bad apple, there's always going to be a rotten egg. Or a bad egg and a rotten apple, whatever word you want to choose.
Right?
But there's always going to be a bad one in the bunch, and you can't stop that. You can just make sure you distance yourself from that person and continue to peacefully protest. Mm-hmm. Now, I went to at least 12 peaceful protests throughout the summer and the fall, because I believe Black Lives Matter, and I am unapologetically Black, as I like to, as my shirt would say.
Have a shirt on. Yep.
So you're seeing his legacy, you're seeing his teachings of peaceful protest, because we didn't stop protesting after he died. He taught us how to do it. So we have continued that. And, you know, through the generations, grandparents have taught their children, who've taught their children, who've taught their children. And now it's just a generational thing where, you know, if something's not right, if something's not just, we're going to do something. In the words of John Lewis, we're going to get in good trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we learn from John Lewis, because John Lewis learned from MLK. So we're going to continue to get in good trouble, and we're going to continue to protest and follow his teachings.
When you were out there during the summer protesting, what thoughts went through your mind as you did it, as you walked the streets?
Honestly, just change. That's what you want. You want change. You don't want to settle for something not just. And you want to ensure that the people you're protesting for are the people you're also protecting. And that was my main goal. You know, obviously a lot of protests during the pandemic, so we all wanted to be safe. You know, social distancing to as much as possible, gloves, masks, face coverings, whatever the case. But while you're out there, you're also wanting to protect your ideals as to what you're trying to accomplish. And that's our goal was change. Our goal was change in legislation. Luckily for us in New York, that call was answered with a long laundry list of criminal justice reforms being brought to the state Senate and the state assembly, which all passed. Overwhelmingly, which is amazing, but we haven't seen a lot of that change congressionally and federally. So I'm really hoping that when we don't have to protest again, but I know that at some point we're going to have to, because we're going to want to see those important changes be made into reality. Mm-hmm.
Dr. King's rhetorical style, how much of a difference did that make as opposed to somebody just saying, hey, yeah, I'm going to do this, come along with me? He got up there and spoke in a way where if you walked away saying to yourself, well, maybe next time, I don't think anybody felt like that after he spoke. It was, sign me up.
Great question. The man's a minister, you know. He was a reverend. He had his way of just connecting to not only his congregation, but his community and his people. You know, he spoke and you wanted to listen. It's very much like Barack Obama. You know, the man just has a way with words. He has this talent to really want to home you in and listen to you. And you're captivated. Mm-hmm. You're captivated.
That's the right word. He captivated you.
You listen to his speeches and you try to find his beats, and you know, as an actor and as a person who has to give a number of speeches and you know remarks a year, you listen to a couple of his speeches, you listen to Barack Obama, and you hear the similarities and the differences, but there's only one MLK. No matter how many people try to mimic it, it's only one.
To me, I thought it was this combination of words, what he said, how he said them, how everything was so inclusive of everybody all the time.
And he wasn't just talking to one group of people.
He spoke
a lot of his speeches, if you go back and listen to them, they're multicultural, they're multi-religious. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, he was a Baptist minister, but at the same time, he gave speeches to Jewish congregations. He spoke the language of all people, and he was a uniter. Mm-hmm. And you heard that in his speeches. You heard that in his communications.
Mm-hmm. Now, during the night, a few hours back, we were on Facebook together for a little bit. Mm-hmm. As we communicated, a good friend of mine from the old St. Agnes High School in Midtown Manhattan, Ray Perez, who grew up in the South Bronx, posted one of MLK's speeches, which I sent to you. It was the "If I Had Sneezed" speech. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that speech, because to me, that was one of his key speeches. It was his last speech, as a matter of fact, to before he was assassinated.
So it's not just his I See speech, but it's also his I Have a Dream speech. It's also almost every one of his speeches that he's given. If you listen to any of them, they're direct, they're poignant, and they're still relevant to this day. You know, it's the comparison of two cultures. If I were to do something and if he were to do something, and who would get in trouble for it? Who would get beaten over the head for it? Who would walk away safe and sound? And you look at those comparisons, and, you know, let's once again bring it back to relevant times. Black Lives Matter protests in Washington, D.C. were met with armed military and armed police officers. And let's take a look back at, you know, the summer, where Black Lives Matter protests were met with military, you know, the National Guard in full riot gear, the Metropolitan Police in full riot gear, the Secret Service in full riot gear, the Parks Patrol in full riot gear. They protected everything from the White House to everything on the National Mall. So you're hearing, we're watching this happen. And we've seen officers and military personnel beat, hose, and horse down Black Lives Matter protesters. But you look at the Capitol siege, and you see police officers let them in. I understand that they were well out of their reach in doing anything. I know there, unfortunately, were many deaths in terms of...
overwhelmed and outnumbered, and makes you think that some police officers say, better off if I do this to prevent...
Exactly, and that's not an excuse to them. That, you know, their life was incredible danger. So it's somewhat understandable, but at the same time...
You have a job to do.
It's, yeah, and there were two different forms of protest. One actual peaceful protest with the Black Lives Matter people being, you know, treated unjustly and inhumanely. And then you have the MAGA siege on the Capitol building, and people were basically welcomed. And they walked out unharmed. You know, we had more officers die than protesters or rioters, although they're more like domestic terrorists than rioters or protesters. But that's what you had. And look at the difference. We saw Black Lives Matter protesters get beaten, hosed down, maced. We didn't see that with the siege on the Capitol building. We saw it to our cops.
The Capitol siege, to me, was a situation where the cops seemed totally unprepared, and they should have had the deck stacked in their favor as opposed to the deck being stacked against them, as it turned out.
Exactly.
And the response we see now for the inauguration, why wasn't that there for the day the electoral votes were counted on, the 6th of January? To me, that made no sense. But at least we seem to have the proper preparations, proper security in place for the inauguration, which is just a few days away. What would Dr. King say now today? What do you think he would say now today in the midst of everything that has gone on and everything that is going on?
That is a loaded question, my friend.
And yet it's something we have to look at.
I honestly don't know what he would say, but I think he'd be out in the street protesting. I think he would be advocating. Well, first of all, if he was still alive, I think he'd be in Congress. I honestly think he had a great shot of, you know,
getting elected.
Congress, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Congress.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think he'd be protesting. I think he'd be fighting. I think we would have seen him do the same things that we saw him do when he was alive. He would have been protecting the culture of Black Americans. He would have been protesting and advocating for fair and equal justice. And he would have just been out there with us. You know, he would have been a fixture. And, you know, he would have been like John Lewis was, a teacher to us, someone who teaches us, teaches the younger generations and those generations between John Lewis's and our and my own, how to do this peacefully and properly, and how to actually make sure that legislation follows it. You know, it's not, it's one thing just to be out there yelling and screaming and showing up for the cause. It's another to follow up on it. And that's what John Lewis and Martin Luther King taught us, is to make sure you follow up on it. Good trouble is not just protesting out in the street. It's making sure that you write letters to your congressional leaders and your senators and your state houses, and you're involved in the political process, whether it's just you volunteering on a campaign or you just voting. That is where decisions are made.
No one can put themselves into someone else's body. We hear stories about athletes who are hurt, and maybe the coaches insinuate that maybe he could get back. And the player says, well, I'm not ready to get back yet, because only I can tell how I feel. The medical staff can look at my x-rays, et cetera, make their own judgments, but you can't tell me how my body is acting or reacting.
Absolutely.
From a courage standpoint, put yourself inside a Martin Luther King, inside a John Lewis, who you met and I know you admire so much. Put yourself in their bodies and talk about, and the things you've done too, obviously. Talk about the courage aspect of all of this and what the risks are that you run.
You know, I see pictures of John Lewis on the Selma Bridge getting beaten. And I just don't know
how he did it again.
How he gets up and does it all over again the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see pictures of Martin Luther King's house burning. You know, Ebenezer Baptist Church burning.
Medgar Evers getting assassinated.
Exactly. There's pictures of MLK being assassinated at the D.C. hotel.
Mm-hmm.
To put myself in their shoes is so difficult, because you know you don't know how they did it, but you understand they had to do it because no one else would.
That's a good way to put it. Somebody had to do it.
Someone had to do it, and they knew it had to be them. Mm-hmm. And from there, they built a movement. And it's a movement that's still going on today. So I don't think I can put myself in their shoes, but I can simply say thank you to them. And, you know, we'll take it from here. We'll keep pushing.
That legacy does not die with you. What do they need to do now from here on out? In the foreseeable future?
I think there needs to be an air of tolerance, John, you know, and acceptance and civility in this nation. We've had a lot of unrest in the last 4 years. We have very little civility. And our leaders have to do better. Our leaders have to show the civility. As well as communities have to just be civil communities and accepting communities. We've lost our ability to accept things that we cannot always control. And there are things we can control, and there are things we can't. You know, you cannot control one person getting more votes than the other person. It's just not a thing. When democracy says your time is up, your time is up. It's a smart thing to do is move on.
Mm-hmm. Have we lost the ability to accept people who think differently than we do sometimes?
I think if you watch C-SPAN for more than 20 minutes, you'll absolutely know that we've lost the ability to stop listening to each other. But we also lost the ability to walk in someone else's shoes. And if you watch C-SPAN for 30 minutes, you'll see that too. You know, we stopped trying to connect. We've stopped trying to reach across the aisle, whether it's a racial aisle, a political aisle, or a, you know, a vision aisle. We've lost the ability to really reach out to someone else and say, let's have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. You know, over dinner, lunch, drinks, brunch, you know, cup of coffee, whatever it may be. We've lost the ability to do that. Mm-hmm. And that really does come from a two-party system. And listen, I people are probably like, well, aren't you a part of the two-party system? I absolutely am. But one thing that I love to do is I love to hear a Republican try to tell me I'm wrong. Because A, entertaining, and B, it gives me an opportunity to see what they see, or at least attempt to, and then it gives me an opportunity to tell them why they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't negate the fact that I've offered the time to hear another side out. Right. And, you know, if they did say something worth listening to, finding a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to go back a few years. My best friend for 27 years until he passed away in the summer of 2010 was Ken Golson, radio colleague of mine on Long Island. He was an NAACP official too, the Eastern Long Islander chapter. He was a vice president for a number of years. When he passed away in 2010, I was blown away. Beyond impressed by the outpouring for him from the NAACP, both locally and nationally, too. His mother, Elaine Parks, was a longtime community leader in Bridgehampton. And I'm going to say I nominated her for this, and I was so happy when this came through. About 2 years ago now, she was elected to the Bridgehampton High School Hall of Fame, but in Bridgehampton, that's a community hall of fame, too. She passed away about 18 months after Ken did in late 2011. Elaine Parks always said, and Ken Golson would always say this to me too, judge no man outside of his time. And she would say that, judge no man, because Ken and I would sit in the living room in Bridgehampton and talk about everything going on locally and in the world. And she'd come in and say to the two of us and point her finger at the two of us and say, judge no man outside of his time. And I think we've learned through the years how true that is. And we look back and as we attempt to put ourselves in MLK's shoes or in the shoes of a John Lewis, we look at that and that leads to the point you brought up about somebody had to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone had to do it. And, you know, I think that quote is ever so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think she had a great point. Mm-hmm. She had a great point. Judge no man from outside their time. Like,
that's difficult to do when you look at certain things and you look at, well, why did he do this? Why didn't she do this? And yet you look and say, well, things are like this today. They may not have been like that 20 years ago. And people can only sometimes make judgments based off the information they had.
Absolutely.
As we move forward now, the inauguration of a new administration coming up, what do you expect from the Biden-Harris administration with regards to moving in the right direction with race relations, with everything we're facing in society now, with the pandemic, most of all here too, obviously at the top of everybody's minds, et cetera. Joe Biden releases his new plan, and he made a great point, I think. This goes to judge no man outside of his time, talking about how this may seem like a lot when I'm proposing, but if we don't do a lot, we'll regret not doing this down the road, maybe not too far down the road. Better to do more than to do less.
Absolutely. So I think there's going to be a couple of things that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris do. You've already seen him, roll out his vaccine policy for the COVID-19 vaccine. And I think he's going to do better than what he is slated to do or what he's supposed to do because I think he understands the need to fix things. So I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see student loans, and I'm going to just talk this into fruition. I pray you see student loans relieved. There's a great conversation going on in Washington about $10,000 worth of student loans being, I could not be happier. Mm-hmm. Do I wish it was 20? Absolutely. Well,
I 50 like AOC proposes and Bernie Sanders.
Yes. I just think we should forgive student loans altogether, but that's just me. I'm a little out there. But, you know, $10,000 is not something to joke about. That's really going to help someone purchase a car, someone purchase a house, and really be able to stimulate the economy in a different way.
Is there a way to move, you talk about student loans, is there a way to move the collegiate system in this country into a fairer system when it comes to tuitions? Because to get into certain schools,
absolutely,
you have to be of a certain financial capability.
Absolutely. I think there's an absolute way. I absolutely believe there's a way to move the collegiate academics into an affordable situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think there should be offers of free college. I think community colleges and state-run colleges should be darn near free. And I think those selective universities that are, you know, praised for being the top of the best, the greatest, I think those have to be, you know, affordable for mm-hmm. those who are eligible to go.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And I've always thought that the system in this country now for decades has been totally out of whack. I remember going to Fordham University back in the mid and late 70s for $10,000 for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, to buy a book, it's basically $10,000. On the other hand, I've had family members who've taken advantage of the city of New York of the CUNY system and paid a minimal tuition through the years. A lot of that is all relative money-wise. That $10,000 today would be so much more today, probably $100,000 or more today. And yet, this system educationally is something I think needs to be changed to give everybody a fair and equitable shot. And that's the only way you can give everybody a fair shot.
Absolutely.
Jovan C. Richards, local memorials, remembrances of Dr. King this weekend. What have you come across?
So there's a couple of virtual things going around in Westchester. One just passed, and that was with the Westchester and New York Knicks, and they invited Andres Cousins, who is the Senate Majority Leader and a Black woman. And they, you know, they had a great discussion about the history of MLK and the legacy of MLK.
Mm-hmm. You had Andrea Stewart Cousins, the majority leader from Yonkers. Also, one-time Knicks great Earl the Pearl Monroe and Alan Houston, the assistant.
What a great bunch, right? What an exciting bunch. And it was refreshing and amazing to see those different calibers come together and have just an insightful and just poignant conversation about race and being change makers.
Mm-hmm. Do you see significant change on the way now, significant progress on the way?
I'm a hopeful guy. I'm an optimistic guy, but I'm also a realist. So I'm going to say optimistically, I think there is great change on the horizon. I'm going to also pivot and say, but that won't come without its fair share of pushback. So I think there are great opportunities. I think we have one of the best opportunities to actually do a lot of good very soon, but that good will not be welcomed by all persons. I think we'll see a great deal of pushback.
And yet it would carry on the legacy of MLK, of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And as we talk on this weekend, that's one of the most important things, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Jovan C. Richards, back with us here on Westchester Talk Radio, the executive director of the Westchester County Democratic Committee, New Rochelle Democratic Committee district leader, also president, New York State Young Democrats, Northeast Regional Director, Young Democrats of America, Westchester Young Democrats board member, media and governmental relations manager, New York State Society of CPAs, also, too, the vice president of a group that's called the Operation Crom National Network. Tell us about that. We've spoken briefly about that before.
Yeah, so it was started by a Yonkers woman named Noelle DeLocco back in 2009, and she has made it a national organization now, and it's primarily just it's aid to deserving high school students who can't necessarily afford prom. And we, you know, donate dresses and tuxedos and accessories and makeup and, you know, sometimes limos and actual proms to deserving students who just can't afford it. Because prom is really a rite of passage, and it's that formal event that converts you from a high school student into the real world. And it's basically, someone called it the wedding day for high school. You know, mm-hmm. It's your high school wedding day where you're leaving high school and entering adulthood because you're going to be 18 soon, or you're already 18. And once you graduate high school, the real world is there to welcome you or greet you or knock you down. But at that point, prom is really your rite of passage into your first phase of adulthood.
How do kids react when you tell them, hey, you're going? Like being,
they love it. I mean, it really is a magical time. You know, schools have done such a great job at really trying to make prom affordable for their students. And all Operation Prom is doing is making it that much more affordable for their students. And we've had some great partners in the years, you know, Giovanni Dresses and Macy's and other great designers, Ralph Lauren, have all donated to us. And we've really done a great job at dispersing dresses throughout the country, not just here in Westchester. Although it did start here in Westchester, we've partnered with other states and other organizations. And right now, the Operation Prom National Network is literally here to assist other organizations that are doing the same thing. You know, we've kind of started the groundwork and we started the process, and we, you know, kind of were the first group to really nail it in how it should be done. And all we're doing now is really teaching other groups how to do it. So now our education is their education. Now everyone is on board and becoming a member of our national network.
How can someone get involved with Operation Prom?
They can go to our website, Operation Prom, or they can Google us or check us out on social media. Try Prom 914 for Westchester, but Operation Prom National Network. If you search us on Google, you'll find our website, all our great social media.
By the way, you're also a hospitality professional, and rumor is you're a master mixologist as well. I can attest to that because years back when I was on Long Island, I'd go to this Applebee's, Walt Whitman Shopping Center, on the edge, the other side of the Walt Whitman Shopping Center, the smaller shopping center there, and the guy who served me sometimes was you, as it turned out.
Yeah.
College student at Five Towns, were you at?
Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm. So we actually first met without knowing each other back then. And a few years later, we worked together with WVOX. And here we are again a few years after that. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Jovan C. Richards. I know you like your scotch, right?
I do love a good scotch. I mean,
so do I.
Pandemic has made me a really big scotch drinker.
Uh-huh.
But now it's also made me a really, and it's kind of turning into an international whiskey scotch. So I've been drinking a lot of international whiskeys, some great whiskeys out of Israel, some amazing whiskeys out of Israel. And of course, you have some of my favorite whiskeys come out of Japan. So, you know, I've been really drinking those two pretty heavily.
And I got to ask you, what does the C mean? I've never asked you that before in the middle of the
So I don't tell people. And if I do tell people, it's always a different thing. So I actually know, no one actually knows what the C stands for, except for like immediate family and not even really close friends, just immediate family. No one.
You won't even tell me, huh?
I won't. Okay. I will not.
By the way, I know your mother is a big jet.
I tell people it stands for connected, because.
And that's good. Yeah.
What I do is I connect the jet, the Jovan and the Richards, with
right.
The C, as I connect the left and the right to meet and compromise in the middle.
Well, nobody connects around Westchester better than you. There is no doubt.
Oh, you're too kind.
Yeah. By the way, your mother, I know, is a huge Jets fan. She didn't convert you, right?
She did not.
You're a Giants fan, right?
Nope. I am a massive Giants fan. I believe in the big blue. And I'm also an avid Yankee fan and Ranger fan.
Right. And a Knicks fan, too, right?
I am. But I don't promote that as much because...
No. They seem to be moving in the right direction despite the 5-game losing streak now.
Only time will tell.
It's great to have a Westchester kid, Obi Toppin from Ossining High, with the Knicks as their number one draft choice and winning National Collegiate Player of the Year.
Last year.
Yep. So it's just, I think they're heading in the right direction. How about that Nets trade for James Harden?
Well, New York actually might be the winner. It might be a winning team sooner or later in the NBA. Unfortunately, it won't be the Knicks. It'll be the Nets. But that doesn't, you know.
Whatever happens, happens, right?
Exactly.
I think they're going to work it out three guys.
We'll still be proud of them.
Three guys who need the ball, so they have to figure a way to make that work. I know Kevin Durant knows how to do this. He's won championships where he had four other stars playing with him, basically, in Golden State.
But Durant's played with Harden, so they'll be a great chemistry there.
10 years
honestly,
later, though.
The biggest obstacle will be Kyrie getting out of his own way.
Mm-hmm. It's good to have Jeff Green, who played with Durant and with Harden in Oklahoma City a decade ago, too. I think in the end, Jeff Green, being the veteran he is going to be the great mediator between everybody here. You can already see signs of it. So,
absolutely.
Jovan C. Richards, always great to talk to you. Let's do this again soon. All the best, okay? And are you going to be in Washington on Inauguration Day by chance?
I was, but I am not any longer.
Mm-hmm. You will be
coordinating
operations from home.
Yep. Yep. I'll be.
Whatever you do, stay safe, okay?
I most definitely will. Thank you so much.
From the pandemic, which I know you do, and with the current situation that's going on now also, too, okay?
Thank you, John. You too, sir.
Thank you, Jovan. We'll talk soon. Jovan C. Richards, he is one of the most important people politically in Westchester County. Right now, executive director of the Westchester County Democratic Committee and one of the most important media people around this county as well, too, here on Westchester Talk Radio, westchestertalkradio.com. I'm John Marino, Cup of Joe political show, produced by Shark Creative, made possible by Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities right through April of this year, 2021. Also by Wartburg Healthcare and Rehabilitation in Mount Vernon, Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, and Michael Labriola Landscape Design and Construction. We thank you one and all. Catch all of our Shark Creative, Westchester, Fairfield County, Putnam and Dutchess Talk Radio programming on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.